Hi everyone. I would like to talk to you guys today about alternative electron acceptors in soil and how they impact carbon cycling and metal cycling. I'm specifically focusing on structured soils. For instance, this hugely excavated profile in Cambodia, or on the smaller scale, looking at a single soil PED, as you see on the right. We care about soil structure because that's what promotes flow of water, but also things in water, such as organic carbon electron donors, food, energy for microbes, as well as nutrients and other resources. So if we look at this soil profile, you can think of advection occurring over the surface of the soil with diffusion going inward of both water and those important resources. You can also think of advection along channels in the soil, for instance, between soil PEDs, and then diffusion into those soil PEDs, bringing nutrients and resources to soils at depth. And along those gradients of diffusion, you get a redox gradient that's going to look a bit like we saw in several of the other presentations today, where you have consumption of oxygen near the surface as a high-energy electron acceptor, followed by consumption of nitrate and nitrate, oxidized metals, sulfate, and then CO2, producing methane. And what you get then is a decrease in electron acceptor redox potential. So there's less metabolic energy for microorganisms respiring on these different electron acceptors with depth. And as such, you would expect lower carbon mineralization along this gradient. And one thing that I'm looking at is, how does addition of alternative terminal electron acceptors affect this carbon mineralization? And what's interesting is, you notice that here's a profile, and that requires a static soil setup, whereas most people who look at, in the past, have looked at alternative electron acceptors and carbon mineralization have used batch incubations. So you're shaking, you're losing your soil structure, and you don't have diffusion limitations, and you don't have necessarily maybe less physical occlusion, things like that. So speaking of terminal electron acceptors, the ones I'm focusing on are sulfate, which is important. It's added through various anthropogenic sources as fertilizer and seawater intrusion, and nitrate, which we all know is a common nutrient. And this is a local example on the bottom right, Lake Okeechobee. Eutrophication, not good. moving on to my... Yes, so carbon mineralization depends not just on the electron acceptor, it also might depend on the chemistry of that organic carbon itself, and so that's something else we might want to focus on since we're looking at a depth gradient, which is going to have different carbon chemistry across it. So here I'm showing you a plot where we have thermodynamic driving force on the left, which is essentially the rate at which a microbe can utilize the energy it gains from its metabolism. For instance, reducing glucose using oxygen. And then on the x-axis, we have nominal oxidation state of organic matter, where it goes from -4, something like methane, totally reduced, to +4, something like carbon dioxide. And we see that across the spectrum of oxidation states for carbon, the thermodynamic driving force is 1 for oxygen. So it's a really favorable electron acceptor. And as we go down to nitrate and manganese, that thermodynamic driving force shrinks. It's not 0, so you can still respire on any organic carbon substrate in theory using those electron acceptors. However, as soon as we get to iron oxides or sulfate, you start to have limitations where at a certain cutoff of oxidation state of carbon, you would expect not to get enough energy for microbes to sustain life using that metabolism. And for instance, glucose or sugars fall in the range around 0, where they could be metabolized with any electron acceptor. You look at more reduced compounds like hydrocarbons, alcohols, those are going to be difficult to produce sustained energy on using things like iron oxides and sulfate. And then we have this sort of tricky intermediate category, things like peptides and tannins, which are vary in oxidation state, but they also require hydrolysis and fermentative enzymes to break down. So that requires oxygen in many cases, or the fermentative organisms. So that's sort of a gray category, but their oxidation state tends to be higher. And then I have to set up a redox gradient in order to study my question. So much like Morse is very similar to reactors, actually, we flow fully aerated water over a 6-centimeter profile of soil that's high in iron, upland soil. And then we get this gradient where we get oxygen, about 0.5 centimeter of it, at the top of our soil profile. We see nitrate reduction, a bit of manganese and iron reduction, not so much sulfate reduction because we don't have much sulfur in these soils. And some of the soils show methane production, but very little. And the way I measure, I analyze things in this experiment, including carbon mineralization and the establishment of the redox profile, is using redox sensors going in from some ports on the top, and then this bulk effluent channel coming out of the right. That's the only channel through which effluent leaves these reactors, so that's how we get bulk mineralization and TOC, dissolved organic carbon production. We also have mycorrhizon samplers at three depths, a high one corresponding to sort of the interface between oxygen and nitrate reduction, a 1-centimeter mycorrhizon sampler for pore water that's in the zone of mostly iron reduction, and then another lower pore water sampler that's in the zone of iron reduction and or sulfate reduction if we're adding sulfate. So moving on to my hypotheses, we expect that carbon mineralization will be highest near the soil surface, where you have the highest energy electron acceptor, oxygen. Nitrate will enhance mineralization near the surface, and sulfate further away from the surface, based on their relative competitive, the energy they can give relative to iron, which is already in the soil. And then finally, the highest aerobic carbon mineralization will be in the control, because there aren't those competing electron acceptors, and highest anaerobic carbon mineralization will occur in the added nitrate experiment, simply because that's complementing oxygen and it's can produce get a lot of extra microbes going. So moving on to results, this is from that bulk effluent. We get the highest inorganic carbon production, which is representative of respiration, from the added nitrate reactors, and followed up by the added nitrate and sulfate. This makes sense because we expected nitrate to give fuel the most carbon mineralization. The fact that sulfate actually decreases carbon mineralization is interesting and requires some further looking into, but it could have something to do with the types of carbon, again, that are being utilized and competition between microbes who are using nitrate and sulfate potentially. And now if we move to total organic carbon exported bulk, we find that most of the treatments are actually pretty similar over time, which is interesting. And especially given that we find the highest inorganic carbon, the respiration, in the added nitrate treatment, this makes one think that there must be a difference in utilization of organic carbon, or perhaps microbial community, that changes the efficiency of microbial use and production of organic compounds. All right, so now we're going to move to the pore water samples. First, looking at dissolved organic carbon. And as expected, you see this is the control sample. You get increasing dissolved organic carbon going from the top of that oxic zone to at depth, so reduced. And this is showing that organisms are taking up and mineralizing carbon much more rapidly near the top of your soil profile. You would expect that as you add electron acceptors, microbes will be more efficient at will utilize more organic carbon, and we see this. There's even decreased dissolved organic carbon when nitrate is added. Surprisingly, this trend is even more extreme for added sulfate, the green bars. Just sulfate, I should say, not the added nitrate and sulfate treatment, which leads one to believe that perhaps sulfate reducers also have, there's also fermentation in the community or something like, there's other processes perhaps that are at play in terms of depolymerization and other things. All right, so moving on then. So dissolved organic carbon also correlates to anaerobic respiration potential. And what I mean by this is, if you take some soils from different depths from the surface of your soil to the bottom and incubate them anaerobically for 30 hours, say, and then look at the gas in your headspace, you get the highest production of gas at depth. So not only is there the most total organic carbon at depth, but it's also can be utilized by microbes. And here this isn't a shake-in. This was done in a batch setup. So what this says is that carbon at depth, or perhaps in anaerobic microsites, may be more accessible than we thought for respiration. And so finally, iron reduction, since this is a session also on metal cycling. As you'd expect, because nitrate is a better electron acceptor than iron, you get suppression of iron reduction. Surprisingly, sulfate facilitates iron reduction, which is odd. This should be iron too, by the way. This is pore water iron, because sulfate is a lower energy electron acceptor than iron. So maybe we're getting some production of low molecular weight organic substances that can be used by the iron reducers as one hypothesis. And as you go in depth, you would expect increased iron reduction, which you do see. And finally, the control treatment sort of mirrors the other treatments where in the zones where iron reduction is dominating all anaerobic respiration. So this leads me to summarize. Soil full of a melange of organic matter, which without any added terminal electron acceptors is used up pretty well across the board with oxygen, and we can also get depolymerization of your large polymers. And if we add nitrate, well, you would expect you get actually a greater use of your dissolved organic carbon, and thus a larger pulse of respiration and carbon mineralization. Added sulfate isn't so good, it would seem, at using up the dissolved organic carbon based on that oxidation state theory. But there appears to be some use and breakdown of smaller organic compounds, minimal respiration, but enough to produce these low compounds that are usable by iron reducers, since we did see an enhanced iron reduction in the added sulfate and control treatments. And that's what we have for this. And I'd like to thank people in my lab, including some amazing high school and undergrad and graduate students, for helping sample the folks at CLS, MSOL, Stanford's Environmental Measurement Facility, and I'd love to have your questions.
We have time for a couple questions. Aaron?
So, you know, I'm just thinking about, like, a lot of sulfate, you know, reducers also can do iron reduction.
Right, that's...
I don't know if you have, like, a microbial... Do you ever smell H2S?
No, I haven't. It seems to dissipate within the soil pretty quickly, but we are looking at the microbial community. That's kind of, yeah, next step.
Yeah?
Sporadically. It's not universal across all the reactors, the replicates in one treatment, so. And it tends to be, and it's all across all treatments, too.
Mm-hmm. So when you sample gas, is that only headspace, or can you get it from the profile also?
I did not get I guess you could theoretically, but I was just collecting effluent in in a gas bag, so in the headspace.
So we've seen methane with depth, but it gets oxidized.
Yeah, that's, I know, it's, that would be interesting.
Tom?
You said you had depolymerization of organic matter. How did you determine that?
We don't. It's sort of a hypothesis. Thank you.
All right. Let's thank Hannah again.